League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Don't sweat the technique.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joe Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
If you love getting great deals and eating at even better restaurants, we have great news for you. Houston Restaurant Week has been extended through September 30th. The ESPN 97.5 proud partner for Houston Restaurant Weeks in 2024. Time to raise some money for the Houston Food Bank. For you, dine out, do good. Choose from over 400 restaurants to visit for lunch and or dinner. Select from their prefixed menus, and a portion of the proceeds goes to the Houston Food Bank. Plus, you're supporting local restaurants. Go to HoustonRestaurantWeeks.com to find all the participating restaurants. It is trending to no Gay on Sunday, out with a hernia. Matt Gay, kicker for the Colts, did not participate in practice. Josh Downs, ankle, did not participate in practice. No surprise there. And then the only player on the injury report for the Texans, MJ Stewart, with the knee. Everybody celebrating that MJ Stewart's on the injury report, only MJ Stewart. Ocho, the Texans were two drop passes, one by Boyd in Cincinnati and another by Tyler Goodson from the Colts, for missing the playoffs with a last place schedule. Now they have to do it all over again with a first place schedule.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, I think to Brian's point, because we have gone back and forth on this, it'll be interesting to see how much of a factor it is. I just truly believe you can't hide from the fact that this is a gauntlet of a schedule, just starting with the quarterbacks, but looking at the teams.
Yeah. The this texter, 713-780-3776, tired of getting the Houston Football, a.k.a. Stute, page emails about subscribing for training camp updates. That's not very nice, 1984. We'll talk about that tomorrow. In mean text. And then 0315 says, tired of hearing about the Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift relationship. I'm not. I love that. That's something that very much intrigues me. She's going to be at the game tonight, according to reports.
Oh, really? I was wondering if the Taylor Swift World Tour was over now that football. Maybe she
couldn't tell you.
Tweaked her schedule. Yeah, I know, because it was like couldn't a tell world you. Tour, and he was on it. The crazy thing is, regardless of if the breakup is true or not and all these other things, he's definitely cashing in, because off the field, he and his brother got the $100 million deal for the podcast. Now he's going to be in two movies. He's going to be in the remake of Happy Gilmore, and he's going to play a villain in another movie on Netflix, where he's turned it into an acting career.
Yeah, good for Travis Kelce.
No, he's cashing in.
Yeah, I still think he would have been able to do that without Taylor Swift, though.
I don't know, from an acting perspective, he's getting movie gigs without the kind of run he's got.
I don't know, he's pretty popular.
Okay.
Maybe not movie gigs. Maybe like Happy Gilmore. But maybe
he's
going to
get
stuff.
The podcast. I totally believe you're right on the podcast side of things. But the movie thing, I don't know, man.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. Matt Chapman signed a six-year, $151 million contract extension to stay with the San Francisco Giants. I hate this, because I wanted Chapman to be in free agency, and then I wanted to sign the cheaper between Chapman and Alex Bregman. Do the math on that. Was once a math major. You're looking at a little bit north of $25 million a year for Matt Chapman. I think we have our bar for Alex Bregman. This is the lowest that Alex Bregman would take. $151 million and $1. I don't think that Alex Bregman will say, like, this was also considered a team-friendly deal, because Chapman loves to be in San Francisco. He didn't go to free agency, which we all know, usually you get way more money if you go to free agency than to agree to a contract extension with the team that you're currently on out of free agency. So I don't think that there's any chance that Alex Bregman gets paid less than $151 million, but let's use this as the bar. Would you give Alex Bregman a six-year, $151 million deal, which pays him a little bit more than $25 million a year?
Yeah, the only thing that concerns me is the 6 years, but if he's willing to go $25 million a year for 6 years with the contracts and the salaries that are going to continue to go up and up and up, I would entertain this for sure. I think that this is a deal that I could, the 6 years I'd be a little cringeworthy of, but if this is the deal that he wants and you keep Alex Bregman in an Astros uniform for the next 6 years at $25 a year, which I think is affordable, not expecting massive drop-offs from him, I could do this deal.
All right, so it sounds like you're in.
I'm in.
You're like, sounds like
there
a little,
you go,
little
I'm
hedgy.
In. I'm in.
Like you're kind of on
I
the fence a little
I hate the 6 years, but 25, I believe, is less than market value for a guy that still's playing at his level, even especially with the defense added in. I'm in.
Now, you say if he doesn't drop off a whole lot. Like, he's dropped off in each of the last two seasons. 820 OPS in 22, 804 OPS this year, or last year, 764 OPS this year. Throw in the fact that he has gremlins in his elbow. The arm has not been as good this year, maybe because of the elbow that has bothered him a little bit. He's going to be 31 next year, so your six-year deal, you're paying him until the age of 36. I'm out. I'm not paying Alex Bregman the match. I'm not even giving him the Matt Chapman contract, and I'm telling you that Alex Bregman ain't signing for less than $151 million. So if Bregman puts that $151 million out there, good luck in Arizona, Alex Bregman. Good luck being an Atlanta Brave. Good luck elsewhere. I'm not paying Bregman $151 million.
Yeah, I just think that the 25 is very enticing. You're right. The one thing that did catch my eye and I'm always concerned with and the Astros haven't shown a propensity to want to do is a six-year deal. The 6 years is the biggest problem. The 25 a year, I'd be in for.
Yeah, 8736 is Boris, his agent. Maybe that's why he avoided free agency. Boris is the agent for both Chapman and Alex Bregman. Now, I don't know why you would say that's why he avoided free agency. Boris loves to take his guys to free agency because he knows that's where they maximize their value.
Yeah, this is actually a good one just for Scott Boris, period, because of the fact that the luster has worn off on Scott Boris being the super agent, the powerhouse that gets everything he wants. There's been a lot of criticism and a lot of guys pointing fingers, including some of his clients, at the fact that a lot of the expected big deals haven't happened for his clients.
Yeah, I still think Boris is the best agent in baseball, though. Like, I think that's baseball wisening up that they're not going to pay 30-year-old free agents seven-year deals. Like, I think the game's just getting smarter. I think they're becoming wiser. I still think Boris is the best in baseball. He's still, like, even these guys who aren't signing these massive deals, they're still getting $30 million a year.
Yeah, but some of these guys didn't. And some was, what's his name? The Montgomery.
Chapman's one. I mean, Chapman didn't get
Montgomery
30.
Was critical. Snell coming on late. Snell had to settle for the one-year deal. So you had some guys. Montgomery was the guy that was
but it's kind of smart, though, because it eliminates their qualifying offer. Like, when you sign the one-year deal, it eliminates the qualifying offer, and teams kind of balk at the idea of free agents that also have the qualifying offer attached to them. So if you go 1 year and then you're back into free agency, you're probably going to get paid more money. And, like, you're still making $30 million a year.
Well, but in the case, Montgomery was one of the guys I said that was really vocal.
$25 million.
But he was not happy, and he was looking for that long-term deal, and he hasn't had the kind of year to kind of say that he's going to get a deal this year that's going to rival in years and money that he was looking for starting this last free agency. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I would still, if I'm trying to maximize my earnings, I'm still hiring Scott Boris as my agent. Now, Boris is going to do what the client tells him to do. Chapman, hey, Boris, I know that I could make more money in free agency, but let's sign with San Francisco. I like them, and I want to be here. He did the same thing with Lance McCullers. Like, Lance McCullers is a Boris guy, and yeah, Lance McCullers' contract looks a little bit better, but Lance McCullers took a team-friendly deal at the time to sign with the Astros because he wanted to be with the Astros. Altuve's another one. Was not a Boris guy with his first contract, was a Boris guy this last contract. But yeah, I don't think that Bregman's taking less than $151 million. I think he would be insulted if he was paid less than Matt Chapman. Now, there is a huge factor, and that's the elbow. If the elbow, if it's a torn UCL, now we have a much different conversation. If it's something they can clean out, a pretty routine surgery in the offseason, I don't think that'll factor in too much to his next contract. I would be stunned if Alex Bregman makes less than $151 million. And at that price, I'm out on Alex Bregman.
Look, don't sleep on the fact that the elbow is a massive concern. It should be for him because, you know, he's trying to tough it out right now and get through it. And we've had these gaps where he plays for a series, then he sits a series. Now he's back again. We don't know how long he's going to stay back. But that elbow is going to dictate a whole hell of a lot in terms of what he gets and the kind of money he's going to have the chance to be offered in the offseason because teams are going to be very, very leery of what's going on with that thing.
1029, would you do 5 years, 151? No, because now you're looking at $30 million a year for a 31, 32, 33, 34, 35-year-old. No, like I'm not giving him $151 million. Like my best and final, 90 for three. And that's not going to get it done, and I realize
no,
that.
I'm offering four for a hundo, and I'm thinking about five for 125.
I mean, you said you would go 151 for six.
But I'll do it. I would make that deal. I would offer that, but I'm saying I would start lower because, like I said, the thing that concerned me was the amount of years on that deal. But the AAV, I'm in on a 25 a year.
Yeah. I mean, Chapman's only 1 year younger. I mean, there's no way Bregman's going to settle for less than 151 unless the market's not there. And I think the market will be there. I think the market will be there unless the elbow has serious ramifications going forward, which – I don't know if they do, if he's playing through it.
Yeah, you got to. I mean, it's also the amount of teams that are going to be interested and need a third baseman are going to be. We know two for sure, right? We know Arizona's going to be in, and they're looking for one. Seattle looking for one.
If they want to spend, like they've been cheap in the past. So, couldn't tell you.
And Yankees? Then
they might fire their GM. Who knows?
Yankees need a third baseman, too.
That would make me sad.
Ooh, that would be nasty.
That made me sad. Keith from L.A. says, how would the fan base react if he signed with the Dodgers? That would make me sad, too.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that. Dodgers and Yankees would not be high on my list of where he goes if he does walk.
Just go to Arizona and forget
fine.
About you.
Yep.
Sell your wild soul salsa in the desert. Go play on a good baseball team. Join Uncle Banny Rooster and, make your money. I'm not giving you 151.
Strami.
Mm-hmm. He's not Bregman's not a pitcher, though.
No, but he's familiar face.
It is familiar face, yeah. And Bregman's more involved with the pitchers nowadays, making those mound visits, which is another Boris client thing. Hey, you're in your walk year. Let's start making some mound visits. That way people think you're a leader. You're a leader. Yeah, follow the Correa path. Hey, go to that mound. Make everybody think you're a leader.
Bregman. Just throw this crap out there to get clicks.
It's true. It's not clicks. It's true. You know, you haven't noticed Bregman's doing this more than he's ever done it in his career.
Yeah, he is.
Bregman's visiting the mound more than he's ever visited the mound in his career. Correa in his walk year. Like, Correa would visit the mound in the past, but Correa in his walk year visited the mound more than he had ever visited the mound in his entire life. Why? They want to be viewed as leaders. Why? Because teams want leaders and they'll pay them more money. It's a Boris tactic, and I see right through it.
Well, just throw this crap out there to get clicks.
He also, in the case of Correa, that was one, and he all of a sudden became way more demonstrative and way more outspoken on everything.
Yeah. Leadership.
It's part of it.
Let's get to Dr. Jesse Morse. We need to get a doctor and a medical expert here on the whole Kyle Tucker thing. Let's pick his brain on what could be going on with Tucker, some timelines I want to run by him, just the whole saga when it comes to Kyle Tucker and the injury. Hopefully he's back soon. Dr. Jesse Morse when we come back with the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. DirecTV and DirecTV Stream customers, you have lost ESPN, including college football, Monday Night Football, ESPN, Sunday Night Baseball, SportsCenter, and more. Take action now. Call 844-KEEP-MY-ESPN or visit keepmyespn.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Being joined now as we go out to the HRP guest line by Dr. Jesse Morse, health and wellness and doctor, sports and family medicine. You can follow him at Dr. Jesse Morse or just head to theinjuryexperts.com. Doctor, this is a really curious situation when it comes to one Kyle Tucker. Fouled the pitch off his shin on June 3rd. You know, what a team gives us isn't always 100% accurate, and certainly wasn't the case when it comes to the Houston Astros. They're saying he's nearing his return in the next coming days, so 3+ months with no Kyle Tucker playing in baseball games. In your expert opinion, what is your best prognosis of what happened with Kyle Tucker?
Yes, this is an interesting situation because when I saw it, usually when guys follow a ball off their shin or their foot or whatever, a couple days they have an annoying bone bruise and then they come back. When you know your shin, if anybody's ever banged your shin, it's very painful, very tender. But you don't really think of it much more than that. You can have shin splints, which are what we call stress syndrome, which is basically like little stress fractures in the front of the tibia. But that's usually from like a lot of running or running on the wrong surfaces, not really applicable here. But I didn't really think anything of it. Tucker's, been elite for many years, very high profile athlete. I'm not really worried about him getting shin splints. But then he just doesn't return. And I'm like, well, what are we missing here? Like something's something's not consistent with their story. If he was my patient, I would have probably initially did an MRI, and then I would ultrasound them. And then if something wasn't right, which it wasn't after about 2-3 weeks, I would have probably got a CAT scan, which is not traditional in orthopedics, but when you're looking for weird fractures, when you're looking for things that aren't making sense, you can see things that you're not going to catch on an MRI or an ultrasound. And it sounds like he had a fracture of kind of the posterior or deep part of the tibia that they didn't catch on the initial imaging, that was just initially ruled a really bad bone bruise, which is exactly what it sounds like. And the problem is he should have been non-weight bearing for probably a month, if not longer, depending on, you know, where it was at and what they were doing to complement it rehab-wise. But I don't think he did that. So every time he kind of walked on it, he's stressing this more, and that's why it likely took so long to come back and heal.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, Doc, because of the fact that we heard shortly after the initial second bone bruise that he was on the treadmill. And having worked in sports long enough to realize they had these non-weight-bearing treadmills that we've talked about on the show, where at the very worst-case scenario, you don't want him pounding on the leg, even if you still want to try and keep his cardio up if he's going to try and come back. I just it's unfathomable to me that they would have prescribed, even if there was any slight concern or the possibility, that they would put him right onto a treadmill.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about an anti-gravity treadmill. There's a couple different versions of it. There's an underwater one that some people use for buoyancy reasons. But yeah, I mean, that you don't get onto that until you're like in your rehab. Like, you don't do that initially. That takes time to graduate to. So I think it was a combination of when the initial evaluation, they didn't see the fracture, and then a lot of the times the player is kind of on his own, or just with the rehab, people are kind of on their own, and he doesn't check in with the doctors a lot, so he probably wasn't making the progress that they wanted, and then by the time they finally figured out there was a fracture, it was way later than they had liked. So, you know, it's unfortunate, because I think if this was properly addressed and if it was identified initially, I think he probably could have been back about a month ago.
Wow. Dr. Jesse Morse joining us on the HRNP guest line. The timeline's what's weird about this, too, because no one's given you the date on, like, when they discovered the suspected fracture. Like, is it something that possibly could have developed later? Is it possible that it could have become a stress fracture because they were being too strenuous on a leg that was damaged with a severe bone bruise? We know that it happened June 3rd. We know that he was on crutches for a few days, and it seemed like they were kind of adamant to get him off of crutches. We knew that he was in a walking boot for a couple of days and then took that off. We know 3 weeks later he was on a treadmill. And then Kyle Tucker the other day, earlier this week, after a little bit of time and continued imaging and stuff, after the swelling and everything kind of calmed down, it was revealed there was a little fracture in the shin. Dana Brown, the general manager of the Astros, said on Wednesday that the suspected fracture was on the back of the bone. Like, how does any of this add up?
Yeah, it's a unique situation because, I mean, you have a high-profile guy. It's not like you're talking about a single-A guy or something. With the advancements in medicine, it's not hard to just go get another scan and say, hey, are we missing something? Have a different radiologist read it and say, hey, like, do you see anything that this one didn't see? And then does the pain correlate with what his initial diagnosis was? My practices in Miami, it's a little bit unorthodox. I predominantly do stem cells and PRP and then non-surgical, whole comprehensive care. So I have my fair share of professional athlete patients. And if I saw this personally, I would have said, well, this pain doesn't correlate. Or if, you know, the therapist are telling me, hey, he's in a lot of pain. This doesn't really correlate with a bone bruise. Then you start digging a little bit more and you say, hey, what are we missing here? And that's when you start looking deeper. And if there was a stress fracture, either as a result of the initial injury and then it just exacerbated, or if it was there the whole time, you know, we don't know. Mm-hmm. But that's the tricky part. And I don't know what modalities they use. I don't know if they put him in a hyperbaric chamber, if they're doing any high dose vitamin C, if they're doing any PRP or any stem cells near the joint. near the area, if they're doing any something called PEMF. Like there's a lot of different moving parts that I use in my practice that a lot of the teams sometimes use and sometimes don't, that could have amplified his healing. And I don't know, you know, they haven't told us what he was doing and not doing, but the question is like, how did this get missed? Cause he could have been, his back could have been used. His glove was important. And now you missed, you know, almost about half the season. Thankfully they're doing well. So, you know, it's a little bit of a moot point, but nonetheless, just unfortunate.
Doc, what Jeremy mentioned is also something that almost kind of incriminates the organization to a degree. In my opinion, I'm curious what you think. But when they initially said everything that they said, and then we saw from replays that there were two impactful swinging bat to a ball, which created the impact on the front of the shin, and we know that's a very, as you mentioned, a very thin area where they said the swelling was too great to see anything at the time. But if the fracture indeed was on the back of the bone, does that not indicate that that probably came from something other than the ball hitting the front of the shin?
Yeah, it could have, or, you know, that's a super rare location. The tibia is really hard to fracture. I mean, very, very, very difficult to fracture. Fibula, the small bone on the outside, the lateral side of the leg, is very easy to fracture, but that's not really a big deal. The tibia is hard to fracture. I mean, there's car accidents, like, you know, fracture dislocations of the ankle, like crazy traumas. Like, it's pretty... You know, I find it a little hard to believe that he would do that following a ball off his leg. Obviously, if he did, then the velocity and the angle just had to be perfect. You know, and even then, like, what's the harm in spending another $300 or whatever it is to get another MRI in a week or 10 days or whatnot and say, hey, is this the same? Is it healing? Is it not healing? You know, bone bruises can technically show up and continue to show up for a year and a half on an MRI. That doesn't mean they're painful the whole time, but we have data to support that. The question is, how often did they re-image him? Did they just shut him down and say, hey, we'll check him again or whatever? But, you know, I hope them and whoever else is paying attention to this. This is a learning situation so that you can prevent it from hypothetically happening again.
Well, that's a lot of information to take in. Dr. Jesse Morse, thank you for your insight on that. And I'm not sure we have more answers, but certainly have more of a medical opinion of what took place with Kyle Tucker. We appreciate the time.
My pleasure.
You got it. Dr. Jesse Morse. You can follow him on Twitter at Dr. Jesse Morse. Has his own health and wellness, sports and family medicine practice. And you can visit him online, theinjuryexperts.com. The most damning thing to me, should have been non-weight-bearing for a while.
Mm-hmm. We
know that he was non-weight-bearing for like 2 days.
Yeah.
They were like, get off of crutches, get out of the wall. He was celebrating a walk-off within a week of June 3rd. Like, probably, I'll have to go back and look at the date. But he was early to mid-June, he was walking out of the dugout, limping out of the dugout to go celebrate a walk-off victory when Dr. Jesse Morse should have said he should have been non-weight-bearing.
We know that he was on a treadmill, as Joel asked him about, on June 28th, which is 25...
No later than June 28th.
Yeah, no later. So we're at most 25 days removed from the initial injury, so also less than the month of weight-bearing. And the doctor said, like, if they'd done things correctly, he could have been back a month ago.
And look, Dana Brown could have been lying to us about the suspected fracture, but he said the suspected fracture was on the back of the bone.
Sure did.
Like, that is what? Like, what? Like, let's talk to Jeremiah Randall. They'll never let us do that. But what? How is the suspected fracture on the back of it when Dr. Jesse Morse said that that is a hard bone to break? And then, secondly, when did you suspect a fracture? I need to know that. And then third, why in the world did you have him off of crutches as quickly as you did and then running on a treadmill within 3-ish weeks?
Yeah, what's more important? What, you know, how you're perceived and what you look like from what you were putting out to what actually happened, or just the overall health of your player to make sure that this doesn't happen for as long a time as it's already happened? Like, don't worry about the fact if you first incorrectly diagnosed or said what you thought it was and that you thought he could come back. But don't exacerbate it by then getting them off of crutches as quick as you can, putting them on a treadmill, and setting yourself up for 3 months.
It'd be easy for, like, you guys have talked about your own stories about having, you know, problems and going back, hey, there's still pain. It'd been so easy to say, like, hey, he's not feeling right. We did additional testing. We found this, to be an additional injury. He's going to be out longer than we initially expected. No one would have been up in arms about that.
And then he mentioned
it would have been so easy.
Spend the extra $300. You got a sponsorship with a hospital and you got team doctors. I'm pretty sure they ain't worried about that. Just exhaust every possible resource to diagnose it as accurately as you can.
Yeah, and like, we don't know everything that happened. Like, right. We will never be privy to that because they will never give us that information. But this screams gross ignorance and or gross incompetence. Quite frankly, and as simple as they had him on his feet when he should have been not weight bearing for weeks. 6207, Houston's one of the best medical cities in the world. It is crazy if the Astros don't have the best medical team in the league. How about just like an average one? Like, yeah. And Kyle Tucker's not the first example of the medical team coming into play here. How about the return-to-play policies with Penn Murphy? How about the return-to-play policy with Luis Garcia? How about the return-to-play policy with Christian Javier, who had a strained neck and then two starts later needs Tommy John? We could go – I mean, I like to keep Lance McCullers out of this conversation because I feel like that's an entirely different animal than comparing it to all of the others. You had Ben Verlander, Justin Verlander's brother, on Twitter doing having a podcast about how the Astros sports medicine staff are clowns, mm-hmm. are hacks. Like, he wouldn't have done that if Justin Verlander was like, hey, yeah, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, no.
It's odd.
There's too much there. And, I didn't know all of the doc's background and we were running out of time. But I was going to say, can you explain the correlation between sleeping pillows and rotator cuffs and gremlins? Because that would have been something that I would like someone with a medical background to say was even a possibility.
Yeah. Not great. Just for my peace of mind, can we please hire a new sports medicine staff for the peace of mind of this fine city? 713-780-ESPN. We'll get your thoughts on that. Also, who's the first non-rookie quarterback to lose their starting job this year? 713-780-3776. It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, it all starts tonight. I'm sure you've got a watch party to go to, or you're going to actually have people over to the house. You need to set up for the best possible game day hangout with your friends. And what's on the menu matters. We've talked about it before. From the dips to the sliders, the wings, the chips and salsa, all your favorite game day foods. And they all go well with a beverage from Stella Rosa Wines. Stella Rosa Wines, semi-sweet, semi-sparkling. It's crisp. It's refreshing. You don't feel like it's a ton of alcohol that you're drinking because you're going to try and pace yourself for the rest of the day. You serve it chilled. It's actually a great taste. You can find it at your local retailer, and you can remember, if you grab a couple bottles, everyone's going to love that taste, that variety, to mix to everything else you're serving. Nothing sweeter than a cold glass of Stella Rosa wine and watching those teams compete, and you've got a full weekend to do it. And now they're also got an offer for you that you shouldn't want to refuse. You have a chance to win some tickets to the biggest game of the college football season at the end of the year, brought to you by Stella Rosa Wines, America's favorite semi-sweet sparkling wine. All you got to do, ESPNLADreamTicket.com, and enter for your chance to be the biggest winner to the biggest game in college football. Phenomenal, and it's as good as their wine is. Check them out, because Stella Rosa can be found at your local retailer, and you can enjoy it chilled. Please celebrate responsibly.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
A week from Saturday, TDECU Stadium, the Bayou Bucket. U of H taking on the Rice Owls. We'll be celebrating Houston with his hometown rivalry. Night of thrilling plays, hard-hitting action, unforgettable moments. Tickets start at just $15. UHCougars.com/tickets. 713-GO-COUGS to get your tickets. Come early, be loud, and wear red. We're also going to give away tickets right now. Caller number 5, 713-780-3776. Caller 5, 713-780-3776. You win a pair of tickets to see Houston and Rice Saturday, September 24th, 7 o'clock kick, TDECU Stadium. for the Bayou Bucket. That's right. 8835, Tyrod Taylor said the Astros medical team is solid. If you forget, Tyrod Taylor was stabbed in his kidney with a needle.
Yeah.
It was a needle, right? It was a shot.
Was it kidney or lung? Did he have a collapsed lung?
I thought it was a collapsed lung or kidney
failure?
Yeah,
I thought they were trying to give him an injection.
It said collapsed lung. Oh, yeah. Is that what I said?
No, that's what I said. That's what I thought
it was. I said kidney?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought it was a collapsed lung that he was in pregame warm-ups, right?
I think they were shooting him up before the game to get through it, right?
Yeah.
Was it before the game or like a couple of
days before? I think it was on the field pregame and they shot him up and suddenly like his lung deflated.
He sued them. I don't know what happened with that. Maybe they just settled out of court. 3413, Astros are turning into shades of Kawhi and the Spurs. Hope not.
Different.
I hope that's not the case.
I think that was a lot of player-driven in the Spurs case. I think this is a lot of question marks between the communication staff and the medical staff.
Yeah, that's a good point. 713-780-ESPN. Which non-rookie quarterback is the first to lose their job? What do you think, Blankers?
I had an answer queued up, but I think my answer has changed.
Why's that?
Because there's rumors coming out of Pittsburgh and headlines coming out that Russell Wilson's calf is still bothering him. And if that's the case, then Justin Fields may be on center stage quicker than anybody else because Russell Wilson may not be able to play. Because my initial answer was going to be Jacoby Brissett. I think that Jacoby Brissett, as much as they've been going back and forth and the Patriots are going to be a very, very bad football team, I think that early on they're going to put their more experienced quarterback out there. But we've discussed this on the show as much as, you know, I don't think that Drake May is ready to go this year. And if they're
this year at all,
I mean, maybe later in the season, I don't really like their line. I don't want to get him crushed, but if they need to see what they have in him and Jacoby Brissett isn't performing well, then I could see that being the change.
I think Drake May and Jalen Polk are going to feed families. Underrated quarterback wide receiver duo this year. It's hard for me to like forecast the injury aspect of it. Like, I mean, Lamar Jackson could get hurt this week, and you know, you're looking at a different one. We're talking about like performance here. And Russell Wilson's a gamer. Russell Wilson's going to ride with that calf strain.
He doesn't play, but he suits up.
Yeah, I mean, I think at some point we do see Justin Fields as the starter. And Wilson's older. I think the easy answer here is Brissett. I think they're going to want to see Drake May sooner rather than later. I think if you look at other situations that are similar to this too, you usually see the change pretty dang quick. The Houston Texans with Deshaun Watson and Savage. Like, they benched Savage. It was at halftime,
Or
was it wasn't even before the final series of the first half?
I think it
might have even been late in the first half. Yeah. Yeah. He didn't come in before the half? He came in after the half?
Yeah
he came in after the half.
I thought he played a series or two in the first half. That situation, like veteran, first-round quarterback, he was the 12th pick of the draft. They bring in Deshaun Watson at halftime. Same thing whenever you had Peterman and Josh Allen. Like Peterman, people forget this, Peterman was named the starter ahead of Josh Allen before Josh Allen's rookie year. Josh Allen came in immediately. I think that was also the first game. Or if it wasn't the first game, it was week two. So you rarely see rookies sit for a long time. I think Drake May is the starting quarterback in New England within the first four games.
Yeah, I could see it. I mean, if their offensive line looks just completely pathetic, like the Giants line a year ago, I would be deeply concerned about having to put him out there because of the fact that he is your future. But yeah, I mean, everybody's different, and you're right. You did make the point, which is valid, which is you got to see what you have. You got to know if this is going to be a guy that's going to be able to do, put the franchise on your shoulders as a quarterback for years to come. If you're going to go out of the box with the guys we mentioned, I think that you got to watch what happens in New Orleans very closely because Carr has proven that he's fallen off more and more. They got enamored with Spencer Rattler because they got a steal of a draft pick. They thought he's looked good in training camp and in the preseason. That's a different animal. But especially if they don't play well, I think the scenario you were painting is perfect for the Saints. If they don't play well, as bad as that division is, but they need to start kind of figuring out what they have and where they're going, Spencer Rattler's probably going to get some time.
Yeah. I feel like the Saints hang around enough where they don't make that change. Like, I think they're going to be within, you know, arm's reach of the division lead, because I think everybody in the division is going to be. I think it's a lousy division. So I think that they're going to hang around enough for Carr to be the starter there for most of the year. I do think we'll see Rattler start a game this year. I just don't think it's going to be early. A couple of other bad quarterbacks in the NFL, like, again, not counting injury here. Like, could you see a quarterback change in Cleveland at any point?
I can't.
With the money that they're paying Deshaun?
That's the biggest thing. I think that rightfully so, they should be. And because the team has a chance to be really good everywhere else, I think they should, but I don't think that they will because of how much they've committed to him and how much they've basically said he's our guy. I don't think that they'll be willing to do that.
Yeah, if he's really, really bad and the Browns are in contention, I could see it happening. Or it's like one final Hail Mary to save their year. Like late in the year, there's four games left to play. Deshaun's been awful. They're two games back from a wild card. Hail Mary, let's see if this happens. I think it's plausible, but I would agree that it's highly unlikely. Tennessee, I think they ride Levis no matter what. Colts, no. Lawrence, no.
Minnesota.
Denver's going with a rookie, no. Kansas City, obviously, no. Chargers, no. The Gardner Minshew thing is interesting because Minshew's one of the worst starters in the NFL. I'm not a big Aiden O'Connell guy.
Right.
So, like, I don't – they would have to be just embracing the suck, completely out of the race and eliminated late in the year.
See, that's the thing. If they crap the bed and as good as they finish the year under Pierce, if they're not playing well, that's a team that's probably going to be looking, whether it be based on their record and or trading up to get their quarterback of the future. They need to see what they have in O'Connell so that they can make one final decision and go, we're trading up to get Shedeur Sanders. We're trading up to get one of the quarterbacks in this next draft. Or we're going to suck so bad that we're going to throw O'Connell out there and just say, hey, do it for us.
Dallas, no. Like, I'm not a big Daniel Jones guy, but I'm not a big Tommy DeVito guy. Like, I think
they'd be Drew Lock, not Tommy DeVito.
Yeah, Drew Lock, I'm not a big fan of his either.
I'd rather see Tommy DeVito than Drew Lock.
I do think there's a scenario, though, for Daniel Jones. We saw through the offseason Hard Knocks that they wanted to replace him. And then we saw at the end of the Bears Hard Knocks where Joe Shane kind of pretty much indicates, like, yes, to Ryan Poles when they were at the Georgia-Clemson games. Man, it's really nice not to be looking at quarterbacks. So I can see if they start off poorly, just pull the plug. They know Daniel Jones is the guy. Let's say they start off 1-5, pull the plug. They know he's not the guy, and let Drew Lock finish the year.
Yeah, I think they're going to exhaust every measure with Daniel Jones. Like, once they make that decision with Daniel Jones, it's over. It's done. The moment you bench Daniel Jones is no longer the quarterback for the New York Football Giants. So I think that they prolong that probably longer than what like we normally would. Chicago, Detroit, Hooker, little Hendon Hooker. I'm kidding.
MVP, baby.
I'm kidding. But I am intrigued by Hendon Hooker in the NFL. It's just he's behind Jared Goff. Green Bay, Minnesota, potentially.
I mean,
if Darnold is terrible.
Yep.
Like, I could see them making a change, even though they have nothing behind Sam Darnold.
Yeah, they got, Brett Rippin, we know that, from Hard Knocks.
From Chicago. Is he the unanimous backup,
though? I
don't
know if he's the second or third. Yeah, I don't know who's behind Darnold.
They have Nick Mullins.
Yeah.
They have Nick Mullins, too. So, like, there's nothing behind Sam Darnold. But if Sam Darnold's tragic and terrible, like, they're going to make that change. They have no ties to Sam Darnold.
No, and if Justin Jefferson's unhappy, they'll consider it as well because they just paid him a boat ton of money. But, yeah, I thought of Sam Darnold immediately. Like, he hasn't ever really been anything. You're not going to hurt any feelings. If you want to just throw someone else out there, then so be it. If he sucks, I think they'd make a change.
Last one here.
I'm sorry. Forgive me if you guys have brought this up, but what about a dark horse of Kirk Cousins for Michael Penix?
That's not a bad call.
If the Falcons start off poorly, let's say maybe 2-5, you know, they have obviously higher expectations. You pick Michael Penix with the 8th pick in the draft. He's looking good at practice. We know he looked so good in the preseason that the coach decided to pull him, said he didn't need to see any more. That might be a spot where they get to the bye week and decide to put in the rookie.
I think the only chance that we see Penix is if they're eliminated, like late in the year. I don't think they look to Penix to change their season. Like, I don't think in that scenario, I think they just roll with Cousins. Like, if they still have playoff aspirations, I think they roll with Cousins. I think if they were to bench Cousins for Penix, it would come week 14, they're eliminated from the playoffs.
I still think because it's a two-year deal that I don't know that they're going to be willing to make the change this year.
Why wouldn't they do it in week 14 if they're 3-10?
Yeah, maybe to get him some run. Maybe, but they've already said, even the way they handled it in the preseason, that they've seen enough of him. They shut him down. They weren't going to play him in preseason games because they know his future's probably 2 years down the road. But, yeah, if you're out of it but you want to get him some run, maybe that's a possibility. But I think that you also understand if it's not that scenario, you run the risk of really pissing off Cousins even more after he was already offended by the fact you drafted a quarterback.
But if you're making that move, you don't care about ticking him off. Like, once you make that move, you don't care about his feelings anymore. And you've already proven that you don't care about his feelings.
You're just sucking it up and paying him regardless.
Yeah, 0979, Deshaun was 5-1. Stop sign emoji, the blue cap emoji. Deshaun's going to shut y'all up. laughing face.
Prove it. Yeah.
Laughing face emoji. He was 5-1 as a starter. That is that is true. The last dark horse one that I have is Seattle. And this would be they're out of playoff contention late in the year, week 14, week 15. You know that Geno is not the option long term, and then they see what they have with Sam Howell.
Yeah, I could easily see that because I've never been a big Geno fan, and he got paid, but he got paid on a shorter deal. And you're right, he's not their quarterback of the future. And for a lot of people that are picking Seattle as a sexy pick to make the playoffs because of the defense, they're still going to have to do something offensively. I don't believe in Geno. I could easily see that happen.
8835, Vikings name Sam Darnold, team captain. Okay, that doesn't mean anything.
So what?
8755, Minshew is not the worst starter. I would take him over Taylor, Brissett, possibly Keenum. Only one of those three guys are starters.
Taylor's a backup.
Those aren't starters. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Let's get to the car wreck of the day. What are you nominating for the car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Give me your bone, you prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
You forgot Hunter Brown's music. Brian. Hunter Brown.
Oh, the game started 6:05?
Pitch today. It was weird. Played at noon. They were over before we were on the air.
Yeah, because both pitchers were dealing. I mean, the game was going lightning fast.
Yeah. Rough. All right, car wreck of the day. What is your car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. Blankers, what are you nominating for the car wreck of the day?
I'm going to nominate Rael and team. He was, keyword was, four-year vice president of content for the Washington Commanders, but he went on a date, I guess, with a journalist who was secretly videoing him on their phone, and he proceeded to go off on calling Roger Goodell a $50 million puppet, basically questioning the players for being homophobic, basically calling fans. He said most NFL fans, I would say, are high school educated alcoholics, likening them to mouth breathers. He went on to characterize NFL fans as violent. There's fights in the stands all the time. And basically saying about Commanders players, a big chunk is very low-income African-Americans that come from a community that is inherently very homophobic. He went, the Commanders got word of this. He initially was suspended, and then he was fired.
He got done dirty.
That was a tricky move. But you got to be smarter than
that. Car wreck on his date.
The date set up the date on a dating app.
Oh, really?
So they were on like a dating app, and they both swiped right. And then she's recording him
on the
at
second
this
day,
date.
Too. So
was it the second
yeah,
date?
Yeah, it was her second date. So he thinks this is going well. This might be a relationship. And
this was weird.
Now, obviously, not all the comments you can defend, but at least for the stuff where he's complaining about his boss. I mean, a lot of people do that. If they're, I mean, maybe
you
not
gotta
on the
know
second
someone
date.
A lot better and be
yeah,
smarter.
Yeah, maybe second date's probably a little early for complaining about your boss. But yeah, I kind of feel
yes. You also got to know what she does.
She probably lied.
She probably lied.
She's recording him on a second date. You think she's truthful?
Yeah, there's no way she told him that she's a journalist.
There's chance.
Yeah, that he starts opening up to her.
Yeah, this was weird. What a weird deal. And then for him to be the target of, like, your investigative journalism. Like, I never knew who that guy was.
No.
So it's weird that, like, that's your target.
Well,
this is a weird deal.
It's weird, but they were right. They got the info they
like,
wanted.
Do you think that she like stumbled into this though, or do you think that it was a target from the very beginning?
I think she had to have some notion from somebody that he has loose lips and likes to just go off. Because otherwise, why are you going after this guy? Wouldn't
maybe
you go
on the
after
dating
like
app,
football operations guys?
Maybe on the dating app he lists his job and she's like, well, let's take a shot at it.
That's what I mean. Like, I feel like that's more chance.
Yeah, that's the way I lean.
I feel like it was more chance than the target.
I would lean that way.
What a weird story.
But if it's just by chance, why are you recording?
Because it was the second day. So maybe he was loose-lipped on the first day,
okay.
And then the second day,
she's like,
this is my chance to be
guy.
A big-time journalist. And she recorded him on the second date saying all this stuff. Because sometimes you can hear her questioning, and she was like, what did you say again? So it's like,
can you speak louder to the microphone?
Weird. Just too, I think you just got to be smarter,
but he got done dirty.
Did you ever get another job in the NFL?
No.
I don't probably
I mean, he's
not.
A VP of content. Like, you can, those are dime a dozen. No offense to content creators such as myself. There was some random person that was almost got into a fight with Izzy Adesanya. There was a video, like, they were in traffic, they were driving by. You know, Izzy's, like, in his very rich car. And there's a guy, like, kind of confronting him and challenging him. Could you imagine getting into a fight with a guy who's one of the best MMA fighters in the entire world?
Yeah, not a smart move.
Yeah,
he obviously didn't know who he was.
Not a good scouting report on that guy.
But wow, could you imagine like going up, like barking up that wrong tree? Where I'm gonna show off in front of this guy. I'm gonna show this guy how tough I am. And then all of a sudden, like it didn't actually lead into a fight. But if it did lead into a fight, oh my goodness, I just tried to fight the former middleweight champion of the world and former pound for pound best fighter in the entire world.
Wasn't there like it was like within the year or so? But there was another ex-UFC champion that was at a bar randomly going to the bathroom while a guy started to pop off to somebody else. And then when he tried to interject, the guy went to go off at him and he just got knocked out.
I remember the story. I don't remember who it was. I don't think it was a champion. I think it was just like a fighter.
Okay.
But yeah, he got dusted.
Got knocked the you-know-what out.
He got dusted. What do you got, Brian?
I got an Astros twofer. Getting swept by the Reds, you still have more World Series rings than wins against the Reds since 2016, which is a hell of a stat. And then what we found out from the good doctor who joined us earlier in the show, it's up on the podcast page, that Kyle Tucker could have been back a month ago if the Astros had handled this correctly.
Should have been non-weight-bearing for weeks. The good doctor. Weird show. Car wreck of the day, Astro Bats, says Alex. Couple of texters. Car wreck of the day is Brian Abreu with his ERA now matching Hunter Brown. Give up the go-ahead home run. Brandon T, car wreck of the day. Keith from L.A. not knowing what tipping is. Pitchers, tippers.
He's a football guy.
Do you say that because you're from L.A.? All right, what's winning? We got to get to a winner.
Astros is fine.
I want to go to the commander guy.
Is it him or the reporter?
I think it's both. The whole story.
Let's do it.
All right, congratulations. That whole story wins. That does it for us. Thanks to Brian for doing the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Brandon. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Good night.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
We're taking a break.
Okay. That's cool.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.